From the Findlay Toyota Studio, it's Cofield and Company.
This kid right here, mark my words, gonna be unbelievable.
He sold his Eagles gear at a yard sale after taking the Chiefs job.
I certainly would say Patrick is the guy.
I've made some empty promises in my life, but hands down, that was the most generous.
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday, Super Bowl week. We'll talk some football as the show moves along. See what's coming out of Miami. JBT is the company. It's Steve Cofield. Ari is here as well. We've got interesting Tom Brady rumors to discuss sometime this hour. Let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
More Kobe memories as well. But out of the gates, the most important thing is, what kind of chips do you have right now? I see you belching up a sub. Late lunch. What's going on with the chips over there, big fella?
Sun chips. 100% whole grain garden salsa. It's a cheat meal. So I've been doing this for 2 weeks. So I got a nice sub with some salami and capicola. And mayo and pepperoncinis and pickles.
You're going to say it the right way?
Yeah.
You're going to say it the office
what
way?
What is it? The gabagool?
You're going to say it the Sopranos way?
The gabagool?
The gabagool!
Yeah, I got some of that.
The gabagool!
I just got done pumping some iron, ran on the treadmill for a while. Justin's inspired me.
Justin Watkins, and later on, our legal insider. Nice pop.
Yep, so I've been cutting, but after 2 weeks, I get a cheat meal. So this is the cheat meal.
Daily cheat meal? Or
No, okay. Every 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, you're looking thinner. I can't tell.
That's where I wear the hoodie.
I think you've made a big error with the chips. As it turns out, Ari, the master of the national day.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Today is National Corn Chip Day. I think a very underrated chip. Might be my favorite chip. I know I'm in a small group that loves the corn chip.
It's literally the worst chip.
But I love every type of chip. Obviously, the brand name, Fritos. I will go for Trader Joe's corn chips. I'll just go with generic Kroger / Smith chips.
They're so bad.
They're the best. They're great for dipping. Curled, so you can dip them in salsa, in bean dip. They're sturdy, and there's so many chips these days that are weak pansy chips. You can't dip with the friggin' things.
Very true. One of the biggest things that irritates me is flimsy tortilla chips that break constantly when I'm trying to get some guac on it.
Shove it with your crappy,
but
snappy, not sturdy tortilla chips.
So the way I rank chips is how good are they on their own. Like, corn chips are very solid for, like, chili dips or things of that nature. But there has to be a dip involved.
They're good solo.
No. They're the worst.
But I'm also a very solo person.
Go to 7-Eleven and, open the bag and put the chili and the cheese in there, Like, that's good. That's solid. But you need something with it.
I've seen that done.
I feel like you've done it.
You probably don't want to microwave those bags.
No.
By the way, when's the last time you caught something on fire in your microwave?
Funny story. Funny you should ask. There was nothing caught on fire. But I was sitting on the couch, and I watched my wife, and, it was one of those where I'm kind of, like, half asleep, and I was just kind of sitting there, and she's getting food, she's warming something up. It was late night. And she throws in, like, some tinfoil into the microwave.
Yep.
And I'm watching, and, kind of, as she hits start, it hits me. I'm like, get it out of the microwave! What are you doing?
Did it go up?
She's, no, luckily, like,
it goes up quick.
It does. And she's like, why? What's wrong? And I'm like, what do you mean, what's wrong? You can't put that in the microwave? She had no idea.
Yeah. I had a cheat hour. About a week ago, and I had like a 6-day-old chicken sandwich from AMPM, and I was like, let me heat this up. And it was in the original package, and I forgot that there was kind of foil in the package, and it was like 2 seconds, and all of a sudden, flames. I'm like, okay, get it out of there.
Man, your eating habits are weird. 6-day-old AMPM chicken sandwich?
It was probably 4-day-old.
Well, regardless, like, why is it making it past 1 day? Like,
it was refrigerated for 3 of the 4 days.
My question.
And it was in my bag. It was a cold weather city. I think it was Boise. Uh-huh. It was cold most of the time.
My question is just how does the chicken sandwich make it past, you know, a few hours? Like, I assume you buy said chicken sandwich with goal of eating it within a few minutes.
I ate it. I ate one pretty quickly, and I was like, wow, that's way too filling. This convenience store chicken sandwich was just too much. And then I saved it, and you understand, you have to have the good bacteria in your body.
I feel like that's like
some chicken crawling with a little bacteria sets you up for other meals. You can fight everything off.
Isn't the good bacteria in like yogurts and whatnot?
I'm just making that part up. That's my intake because I'm not eating good food with good bacteria. That's my good bacteria.
Your macros? What are the macros of an AMPM chicken sandwich? It's good.
Can we look it up?
Yeah.
Please? All right, National Corn Chip Day. I'll be having some later. I'm not sure what kind, with what, or maybe just plain.
So since we're talking about this, I don't know if you remember the biggest chip controversy of the last 20 years. And it involves said chips that I have in my hand.
Chips. Yeah. I thought it was what was that stupid chip that was out a couple of years ago? Probably around the Super Bowl, where all these morons did it and gave them free pops on the air. It wasn't the Takis. It was a different one. And I've seen them out, and I'm like, boy, wasn't that a dumb? Actually, it was a brilliant marketing plan because every moron in radio was like, oh, let me try these on the air. Because their name 500 times. Send me a check.
I can't.
Then I'll burn my mouth on air.
Yeah, it started with a P, and it was like the single chip. It was really hot, and you know, you try it and see if you can handle it. But the biggest chip controversy of my lifetime. Was with Sun Chips. Like I want to say, like 10 years ago, they tried to get eco-friendly, and they made their bags like they changed the material of their bags. They were so loud, like you couldn't pick it up without like a like it was massively loud to the point where they had to change it back to the original bagging. You don't remember this?
No.
Oh, it was huge.
Why would a loud bag of chips, why would a loud bag be a problem?
Dude, it was annoying. I didn't think it would be either. But then you buy like bags of Sun Chips and it was just like Armageddon. It was like a war was going on in your living room. It was ridiculous. When I would go out to my kitchen as a youngin', couldn't sneak chips.
Couldn't sneak them.
Yeah? Okay. You'd be waking up the whole house.
I get it.
So they said screw the earth and they went back to these.
So we got some betting talk today. Oh. By the way, we're watching one of the daily betting shows.
Wow, that's a nice coat.
I'm just going to say straight off, I am going to fade every over individual player prop that these shows like.
Including
now,
mine?
Now, I may get crushed. Oh. I may get crushed, and we may have a 42-38 game, but it is freaking square central.
I like one over.
I like
the best
people, you know, the dream stories.
Oh, God.
The ones you hold up as beacons of hope, like Mattress Mack. The furniture mattress guy who bet on the Astros.
No, he didn't.
Okay, who bet as an insurance policy.
Take the bet out.
Who used wagering as an insurance policy for his furniture promotion. He couldn't lose either way. He could just make more money one way over the other. He's back. And you know what? He's got might. As a famous bettor, he's now asking for good lines. Here he is with Kelly in Vegas. And he would like to bet on the Niners, and it's up to you, bookmakers, to give him the right number.
I am looking to get a big bet on the 49ers. I'm looking for +120 on the 49ers for $1 million. So I need a legal sports betting site in the United States. +120 on the 49ers. Give me a call, 281-844-1963, or text mess me at that number, and we can line it up for $1 million, +120 on the Niners.
I love it. What a great number on the Niners.
Okay, what is Kelly really saying?
Stop asking for a number that doesn't exist, dweeb.
What a great number on the Niners.
Yes!
One you're asking for an extra, you know, 15 or 20 cents.
That's what bothered me about this immediately when I saw this. I'm like, who are you? Who do you think you are? Like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go walk around like, hey, guys, I'd really like even money on the Chiefs money line, please. Thanks. Appreciate it. Like, who do you think you are? The best number available is +110. And you know what else annoys me? Not besides the whole Astros thing, is the fact that when he throws it in there at a legal book, like he's trying to show, like, hey man, I'm doing this all above board. Come on, I'm a good guy. Like, stop. You're asking for something that doesn't exist. All right. You got famous because you weren't even betting. It was an insurance policy to maintain your richness. Get out of here. And by the way, people have now thought that he has become somewhat of a mush. Astros World Series, Titans AFC Championship game, and now he wants the San Francisco 49ers.
Are you mad at our local newspaper for writing stories about Mattress Mack every chance they get because they know it's good clickbait? Or are you doing your job when you do that?
I think you're doing your job. I think also part of doing your job is...
So I point to the heavens.
Yeah.
Todd Dewey.
I think
doing
part
what
of
his bosses want.
I think part of the job, though, is you have to include in there like the intricacies of what he actually did with Houston and the Astros and whatnot. And it sounds like, for the most part, this is probably him just actually betting, but like I don't really care. just stop asking for numbers. Go bet. You can get plus 110. Okay? You can go get it. Go get it.
So Mattress Mac has now become a villain.
Oh, he's been one for me.
For JVT.
It's annoying. It really is. Like,
I get you. It's sort of a phony story.
Yeah. Especially the Astros thing really, like, irritated me because it was, like you said, and not even just because Dewey did a good job of covering it, and most media outlets that actually covered gambling for a while did a pretty good job with it, but it was just, it was thrown out to the masses as, hey, look at this guy. He's betting big, when he really wasn't. And that's the issue.
So you'd rather see some other big bettors slash celebrities pushed in these narratives?
Yeah, I mean,
like, who's that Dan Bilzerian guy?
Oh,
doesn't
yeah.
Did he lose a lot?
Could we find out
more about Floyd Mayweather?
What did he bet? Did he bet something in the AFC Championship game? No. He bet on Cowboy. That's what the last one was that I saw. He bet on Cowboy in the McGregor fight.
A lot of value.
Did not go well.
A lot of value. That may have been the most confident I've been on a minus 300 favorite in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Outside of, Floyd was much bigger than that against Connor. But good bet. Hey, dog value. Nice play. State of the NFL address today, Roger Goodell. This thing's changed a little bit. It used to be really cantankerous, media people all annoyed at Goodell. He's gotten better at dealing with the public. See if you like what he says here. He's addressing the issues of Antonio Brown and how the league would like to give him one of those NFL draft hugs and help him out.
Antonio's situation, I think the first thing for all of us is to think about the well-being of Antonio. To understand what Antonio's going through. We don't talk about the wellness of our players publicly, but I would tell you that you can be assured that the NFL and the NFLPA have a tremendous amount of resources that are available to all players. They are going to be made available to Antonio, and that we want to help get him on the right track.
Okay. Do you believe that the NFL cares about Antonio Brown?
I think to a certain extent, probably, but the extent is he's a star, he's an electric star, and if he's on the field, that only helps our bottom line for the most part.
Could they have said this in the past about other players who've had issues, and especially ones that appear to be, you know, mental health issues like, you know, bipolar?
Talk about like an Aaron Hernandez type?
Well, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if the Patriots tried to help him out. It would have been nice if Urban Meyer told the NFL, hey, this kid's got some serious problems. Keep an eye on him.
I feel like...
I'll give you another one. The Cowboys with Randy Gregory.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Cowboys wanted to dump him, but the NFL didn't give a rat's ass about Randy Gregory, who kept getting caught for weed, smoking weed. Josh Gordon, too. And in the case of Randy Gregory, he's like, I am diagnosed bipolar. This is what I'm supposed to do in terms of, you know, medicating myself and being more balanced, and the NFL didn't give a damn. Now, you could say, hey, today, you know, maybe recently, Raj and the league and the owners, they're starting to smarten up.
Mental health is becoming more apparent, like more valuable to people. They're understanding how important it is. There's an argument there. I think really it does. I mean, that's part of it. I do think the whole star aspect of Antonio Brown is something. He's a much bigger star than the two guys you named. And Aaron Hernandez is obviously different considering that the things that he was doing were violent crimes and something that you kind of can't come back from in that regard. But I do think, to a certain extent, and yes, he meant it, but what's he supposed to say?
Yeah, he can't win here.
Yeah.
Because to me, the flip side is, if you're helping him just to get him back in the league so you can make money, no thank you. I mean, I'll go on record now. I don't want him ever playing for the Raiders.
No.
And I don't think he ever will. I don't want it until that guy, and he's going to have to, I don't even know how he exhibits it. I don't know how long he has to show that he's of right mind. I would never want that guy living in Las Vegas. Do you realize how above the law he believes he is?
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize how much danger all of us are in? Not even knowing, you know, if you live in his air. He was just throwing a rock at a moving truck because he, you know, he keeps pulling this, I'm not going to pay for stuff. Then he's trying to beat up a moving truck driver. You know, the SO works in a salon. Can you imagine him going in there and, you know, all of a sudden he's all pissed off about his blonde tips? You know, or his teeth whitening or whatever else he'd get done at a salon, and his then just starts blonde, going off on people and throwing stuff.
Blonde mustache.
Yeah, the blonde mustache.
Yeah.
Right?
People
almost never address this with players in their community. Like, that's why the NFL, that's the biggest thing, is save us from the player.
Mm-hmm.
Keep us safe, Raj.
I think part of it is just the way we view athletes in general when it comes to that, though. Like, a lot of the times, athletes are viewed as a little bit more than human. It's the same thing that, you know, we'll get into it, and you've gotten into it over the last few days with Kobe Bryant. Why what happened with him was so shocking. Like, you view athletes in these different lights, that they're better than you because they are bigger, stronger, faster. And I think that's part of the reason why they're perceived in the way that they are, and that people don't consider, hey, this guy's a part of my community. Because when do you ever float around in the same circles as a professional athlete at that time? So I think that's why people don't perceive it, but you're absolutely right. Like, you should be worried if a guy like Antonio Brown comes around with what he's been doing. The other thing is, too, to your point, like, let's say he does turn things around, like, he's still going to have this floating around him, and it's his own fault. And for a long time, people, I think, should be wary if they're in his presence, or you have to go. If you're a delivery driver out here, let's say in Las Vegas, and you have to go out there or something like that, it's gonna carry around him. And maybe in 10 years, when nothing has happened, we can go, look, he has been a changed guy. But until then, it's going to be with him.
And we had this discussion before around Richie Incognito kind of throwing the theory out there. Hey, you know what? Some guys, maybe they need the game. Maybe they need the structure that keeps them straight. Is that the case with Antonio Brown?
Didn't seem like it.
Right? Yeah. Whether he's on a roster or not. I mean, I truly, he does need
something.
He needs something, either medication or therapy, or he needs something. So I hope the NFL helps him, but not just because they want him back in the league.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600. Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Woo! Compiling the data right now, John. Watching all the TV gambling shows. Everyone's on the plus number. Everyone's on the yes. Everyone's on the yes. So I will have a lot of the props talk Thursday, Friday. Oh. Sunday morning, we'll be out at Westgate. 2-hour show before the Super Bowl. John Murray from the Westgate is going to join us today at 4:45. John's in a mood. He's anti-corn chips. He's anti-mattress Mac.
Yep. Full.
I'm in a bit of a mood. That's going to come out a little later on.
Seems like a normal day to me.
Well, the last 2 days have been kind of rough with Kobe.
Yeah.
It's been less of a mood. But other people have put me in a mood. I don't know what all this mood stuff.
As they do.
Yes. I was just snapping during the break. I'm like, we suck. Show's terrible.
I think you also fired me, but I just turned in my employment paperwork, so that'd be kind of a hassle.
No, I was play firing.
Ari?
Us as a group in the building and our organization. Yes. That we're not up to snuff.
You hear that, Tyler Bischoff?
We need to get better! That's what UNLV fans are screaming right now about the quarterback position.
Looks like there might be.
Little chatter last night into today. So they had a high-profile transfer commit at quarterback, a kid named Justin Rogers, who was a top 50 player overall, signed with TCU, their highest-rated recruit ever. But he's been struggling with knee injuries for the first 2 years of his college career. I forget which service does it. Maybe it's 24/7 recruiting. I don't know. One of them. They do a crystal ball. Yep. So when this kid announced that he was transferring from TCU, early predictions were Purdue, right? Former NFL and college quarterback, coaching at Purdue. Might be a nice match. Well, Marcus Arroyo and company got their hooks into Justin Rogers. He came out for a visit, and yesterday at 4 o'clock, he indicated that he's coming to UNLV. Don't know what he has. Don't know where he is health-wise. Mm-hmm. Big kid, 6'4", 225, was the number 3 dual-threat quarterback overall in the 2018 class. So they got something to work with here. So they've got Kenyon Oblad, this kid Justin Rogers. For now, Armani Rogers is still here, still playing quarterback. And then you've got some other promising youngsters on the roster. And Doug Brumfield coming in from Southern California as a true freshman. I immediately saw, like, panic over Oblad and his role. Calm down.
Yeah, why?
Like, is Kenyon going to stay? Calm down. Spring practice hasn't even happened yet, right? A lot is to be decided.
Well, and I think this is what you want.
Like, this is what you want. Like, I love, like, immediately people start judging you, like, who's leaving?
Yeah.
Right now, no one. The biggest problem, one of the bigger problems that Tony Sanchez had in turning the corner was not having a backup quarterback who was ready. Oblad got better last year as time went along when he took over for Amani Rodgers. But when he first started, he wasn't ready. The year before, you know, nice kid, but Max Gillum was not ready to be the quarterback when he first started playing behind Amani Rodgers. And you got to have two good quarterbacks. Otherwise, at a program like this, there's an injury risk, and then all of a sudden, winning six or seven games becomes really tough. So you want a deep quarterback room. You want a battle.
Yeah, 100%. And they just make each other better. And you have an offensive coach in Arroyo who should likely develop these guys. But it seems like on the surface, just reading the background of the dudes that are coming in and what we know about Oblad, to me what sticks out is there's just a lot of talent in that quarterback room now. And that's the thing. It's not even about preparation. Like, these guys all have certain talent sets that look like they could be pretty good quarterbacks if they develop properly. So not only do you have a deep quarterback room, you have a lot of guys who, if thrust into action, to your point, could likely actually have an impact, which I think is a very good thing for this team.
Now, that said, the conference has had Power 5 transfers all over the place, and oftentimes they don't win the job.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason they left the Power 5 spot, right? Recruiting and the number 3 dual and top 50 this, not always accurate. Nice. So they have a guy they're excited about. Clearly they wanted him. They got him. To me, that's the bigger positive. That's the overarching theme here, is that it seems like the majority of players they brought in, and there's been some transfers, they've come and they've committed. That's a good sign. Not everyone's committed. They're waiting on a few. They've got a few more that they're offering. But that's a good sign if they come here and you come away with, you know, 60 or 70% commits.
Mm-hmm. They come and they don't leave, essentially, which is really good. And I was actually surprised, too, is, you know, now at this point, everybody was freaking out about the early signing period. And look where we're at now. I think they're fourth, according to 24/7 in the Mountain West, in terms of the recruiting class. You know, like, I think it's 8 three-star guys at this point, 9 if you include the Gillum kid, or excuse me, not Gillum, the kid who committed to Tony Sanchez, who was going to stick out, Brumfield. The recruiting has been as solid as you can without seeing what's going to happen on the field with Arroyo in these last few weeks.
On short notice, especially.
Yeah.
With short notice. Armani Rodgers. A couple people were tweeting, all right, time to change positions. Let's go. Check your ego. Change positions.
Why? You really think he should?
I don't.
I don't think so either.
I think his future in the NFL might be a tight end? Sure. But I'm not going to tell a kid to switch positions. First of all, Arroyo hasn't had a chance to see him up close out there on the practice field. Maybe he wins the job. Maybe Arroyo does take him to the next level. His accuracy has got to get better. I mean, he obviously has other weapons that are ridiculous. He's one of the best running quarterbacks in the country. Has to stay healthy. But, Caleb Herring got involved in the tight end conversation today, and it was, you know, because someone threw out, hey, just gain 30 pounds and play tight end. Caleb's like, all right, first of all, does he want to do it? Two, gaining 30 pounds in an offseason, not that easy. And then I jumped in. I'm, you know, I think UNLV returns a nice collection of offensive players.
Mm-hmm.
One of their best positions is actually the tight end position. Now, two of the guys are suspended to start the season in Noah Bean and Gio Faiolo because of what happened at Reno. But those guys, they're good players. And then Shelton Zeon, as a third guy, he's good. I'm not even sure if Rodgers switched to tight end that he would play.
Yep. That, to me, the thing is, kind of alluded to with Herring's comments, it's like, does he want to? With me, it's always with the, because I always view them as kids because they are, you know, like, it's his career. And if he wants to change a tight end, he wants to. And if he doesn't, he should remain a quarterback. And here's the last thing about quarterbacks, too. Coaching makes a massive difference in developing quarterbacks. And if Arroyo can come in and develop him and make him better, you have no idea what he can become.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
Garoppolo still only thrown 6 passes. Mostert, left side. Another first down carry and more. How about a touchdown?
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota Studio.
All right, let's talk a little Super Bowl 54. A guy who played for the Niners is Alex Boone. I understand he's very fired up. Alex, it is terrestrial radio, my friend. just warning you ahead of time. What's up, buddy?
Dude, how are you guys doing?
We're good. We are fired up because we live here in Las Vegas. Are you jealous?
No, dude, I'm so jealous. I'm at like negative 20 right now in Minnesota in the middle of nowhere. Kidding me? Of course I'm jealous.
Do you ever walk around Minnesota and just poll people like, hey, why do you live here?
Too many times I ask myself the same question. I look outside like, what am I doing? Didn't I play enough football to make it somewhere else? God.
So terrible. When it comes, I'm curious, with Las Vegas and everything, obviously the Raiders are coming here next year. How many excuses are you going to make to be coming out here over the next year to watch some football?
Dude, I got to be honest with you. Me and Vegas don't mix. And okay. Everybody knows this in the NFL, and they're constantly like, dude, do not go to Vegas ever. It's me. You guys, you really don't want me there. It'd be like explosive at some point.
It would be the 2007 All-Star game.
What do you mean? What happened? What are your worst stories?
Dude, I listen, I'm one of those guys that can just go all day and all night and just never have to stop. And so they're like, listen, man, you got to be, like, controlled when you're there. We used to go as an O-line, and they'd send someone, like, just to, like, cater. Dude, you got to watch Boone. He's going to be going all day, all night, counting the gambling. Are you kidding me? Dude, come on, guys. I got the heating hands.
I love it. Alex Boone, former offensive lineman in the National Football League. Well, your intro – and I know you've been doing media for a while, but to me, your intro to media this year on a larger scale was your story about Adrian Peterson. How much blowback did you get after kind of going after Adrian Peterson?
I got a little bit of blowback, but yeah, you know, I guess I did go after him in a way that was not excusable, but you know, I felt how I felt, and you know, I still do. It's how it is. I mean, at times people like get mad at you. They're like, how can you not like your teammate? You're like, dude, listen. There's teammates that I love and there's teammates I didn't love. It's just how the game is. Sometimes we didn't jive together. We didn't group together. We didn't feel each other. It's fine. We have no malice. It's just like, dude, I really didn't care for him at the end of the day.
Please don't tell me that you had like sports radio people get on you for that, because sports radio is the worst. None of us like each other.
No, not at all. I think it was more just fans. And, you know, some people are just so loyal to players that they don't see other things. They don't see you as a human. Like, dude, at the end of the day, I'm not talking about as a football player. Like, I'm not coming down about him as a person. Like, this is just, you know, there was times where I was like, dude, this, some of the things were like, wow, all right, cool, I got it. This is how it's going to be. And some people don't see it like that. And it's a shame they don't, because they don't see, you know, they think we're just so shallow and stuff. You're like, dude, there's more, so much more to this game than that.
Just go play. Well, you were comparing him to Frank Gore, who is a model citizen, right?
Dude, Frankie G's the man. And Frank's a great guy. He's still doing it. Can you believe somebody told me the other day they don't think he belongs in the Hall of Fame? I almost went through the phone. I swear to God I did.
Well, yeah, I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. But there is the argument against longevity guys. Like, what do you think about Eli Manning?
Oh, well, that's different. I mean, Frank, to me, when you're like number three on the all-time rushing list, no matter how many years you've played, like, dude, you've played whatever. You were an amazing running back. And just – to me, Frank was the epitome of a selfless player. Like, he was like, listen, I want to be in on third down to block, because that's what I love to do more than I love to run. Like, he would de-cleat safeties off the edge and laugh at them and be like, dude, try it again. I dare you. I love this guy behind us.
How about Eli?
You know, he's going to get in eventually because he's a Manning, but I think that there's sometimes – the biggest thing to me is his record. And he started out hot and he had a great record for a couple years, and then it was the back end that it was like, there's times where as a quarterback, and you see this sometimes with Aaron Rodgers, where he's going to have to pick his team up and carry them the whole season. He just didn't do that for me, and it was kind of an up-and-down back end of his career. And it's a very, look, you know, what have you done for me lately league? And it's, you know, he'll get in, obviously, because he's a Manning, but, you know, first ballot, I would say no.
When you look at the Niners' turnaround, who do you give most credit to?
I think I got to give most credit to Kyle and John, just because, number one, they've stuck to the formula and they haven't been like all over the place. You know, one year they're conservative, the next year they're not. One year they're out here real outspoken, the next year they're not. They've always been sticking to the same formula. Listen, we're looking for certain guys to fit criteria to play on this team. And you see them bringing them in every year, and they're turning these draft picks that they bring into great players. Look at Jimmy Ward. Everybody wrote Jimmy off, and now he's one of the best safeties in the league. He's hard-hitting. He gets the concepts. I think that when you put certain people in these elements around great players like Richard Sherman and Nick Bosa, all of a sudden they start to blossom and bloom, and this is like a long time running for this team.
Alex Boone is with us, former offensive lineman in the National Football League. I think the thing that they've done to build a team is the most obvious thing, but bad organizations can't stick to it. You have to be dedicated with your high picks to drafting defensive linemen and offensive linemen. And there are so many organizations that can't stick to the formula, and the Niners have the whole time.
I agree. And I think a lot of credit, too, goes to Jed for sticking with the formula as well, because nowadays you see so many owners that are like, listen, you need to win for me right now. And that's not unrealistic. I mean, what coach is going to come in and, yeah, there's going to be a little boom and a little shazazz and, wow, this is great. But eventually you're going to land on your feet. These guys took years to get this going. They lost Jimmy last year. Now he's back. There's still people that count out Jimmy. Like, what can he do? He can win games. And Kyle doesn't care how they win as long as they do win.
Well, you mentioned Jed York. I think that's another part of the turnaround, the fact that Jed backed off. Is that a bad term? Because we heard stories about Harbaugh getting really annoyed with Jed York for being around the team too much, meddling too much.
I think that when you talk about some owners, I think that, you know, Jed is a huge fan of football, and he's a huge fan of the team. And he was great around the team because he was always really positive, and I love having him around. Some coaches are very different. I think that when you look at Kyle and John, those two work really well together. And I think when you see them from afar and even probably close up, Jed was like, listen, I don't want to meddle with these guys because they know what they're doing. One comes from a long lineage. The other's a Hall of Famer. I should probably just let them do what they do best.
What was your impression looking back now on Harbaugh?
Jim was I love Jim personally. I think that I understood him a lot more than anybody else did. And he was a true fan of the game, a true football player, and he believed in excellence every day. And he believed in getting the most out of you. And people don't understand me sometimes when I'm like, man, there was days I couldn't stand him. I wanted to fight him. I think there was a couple times we did fight. But that's what you get from a coach. You know, if you really love your coach, at times you're like, dude, all right, here we go. Let's just put him up and start swinging and see who wins this one. And he was tough. I'll tell you right now, that was one guy I was like, man, I don't really want to fight him first because he would throw him. He didn't care.
Let's repeat this.
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh, who's much older than you. He's smaller than you. You're an offensive lineman. Like, you looked at him and you're like, man, I don't know if I want to scrap with the coach today.
Dude, I'm telling you, the first meeting we had with this guy, he comes in, his arm's on like two different planes. He's like, I broke my humerus and didn't tell anybody and played through it. I was like, this guy's a nutball. Like, this is my kind of guy. And he'd be like, listen, sometimes you just got to fight it out. And I was like, God, anybody that claims that sometimes you just got to fight it out at his position is prepared to go all the way.
I love it. So I'm curious, you know, one of the things I'm really looking forward to this Sunday is the 49ers defensive line versus the Chiefs offensive line. From your perspective as an offensive lineman, when you face a team that can rush four and consistently get pressure, what's the difference like as opposed to facing a team that's constantly sending blitzers?
Well, I think when you say you can only rush four, at times on an offensive line, there's going to be a free hitter. And that, to me, is when you have to take full advantage. If you're the Chiefs at all and you're going to try and get a leg up on this at all, you have to say, hey, listen, they're not going to blitz us as much as other teams have. This is where we have to get an extra hitter in there. At times, if somebody's showing a rib cage, you got to go in there and just blast it. You have to send these guys out of the way. I think they're going to try and contain Patrick, so the more you can blow open that pocket, open up the middle of the lane for him, I mean, it'd be so much better.
What do you make of that matchup overall? Because like some of the numbers dictate, I think that Kansas City Chiefs offensive line is like really underrated.
I'd say okay, they're underrated, but they're about to play the number one defensive line in the NFL. So it doesn't matter whether you're underrated, overrated. Like, if you don't come prepared with your lunch pail, be prepared to get your face kicked in.
Yep. So if we're looking at this from the Chiefs' offensive perspective, I mean, you have one of the best, actually the best quarterback playing football right now, Patrick Mahomes. Is it just, let's go, let's ride him? They can't really run the ball, so let's see, let's make some magic with this kid, and we have a great play caller in Andy Reid.
I think there's a little bit of that, but you do have to keep this team honest. If you look now, everybody's starting to go back and say, listen, the run game is more important. As an offensive lineman, I always knew how important the run game was because you see how it affects D linemen. Number one, it wears them down. It gives us a chance to beat on them a little bit. At times, it gets them running sideline to sideline, wears down their cardio, and then you get to beat on them a little bit more. So for me in Kansas City, you got to say, hey, listen, we got to keep these dudes honest. We got to try and get Damian Williams going a little bit, if not LeSean McCoy, whoever, well, you know, if they're not riffing right now with him. But whatever it is, we have to keep this defense honest because if we don't, well, then they're really just going to pin their ears back, and that's right in their wheelhouse.
Last three games we've seen from Patrick Mahomes, I feel like he's unlocked some different level of his game because he's been a lot more mobile. Last three games, he's run the ball at least seven times. The offensive line has been great in terms of just giving him time to look downfield and if not, just run. How much of a difference is that going to make? Because during the season, he only ran the ball like three times per game.
Yeah, no, it's going to be huge, especially a game like this when you're talking about one of the better back ends in the NFL. And there's going to be times where you know Andy Reid's going to split everybody out and he's going to say, hey, listen, let's see how long they can cover the back end for. But also, trying to cover up this defensive line. These guys are really smart, and Robert Saleh has shown that he can do it against the Seahawks. He's done it against Aaron Rodgers. He knows how to keep these mobile quarterbacks in the pocket. That's the place they don't want to be, and people don't know that. They think, well, isn't that where the quarterback wants to stand? Mm-hmm. Some guys do, some guys don't. Patrick Mahomes is one of those guys. I'd rather be moving around. I want the second window. I want to extend the play. I want to see what I can do. Let's do some razzle-dazzle. When you play a D-line like this that are sophisticated, extremely athletic, and ferocious, you got to watch out, and sometimes you just got to get rid of the ball.
So obviously we're talking about a lot about the 49ers pass rush. Their defense overall has been great. Where do you stand on the Richard Sherman is good, is not good debate?
I'd have to say he's in the he's really, really, really good debate. I mean, he's shut down a lot of people, and at times, yeah, he's shown that he can give up a play or two. But for the most part, for a guy coming back from an Achilles, and I was on the field when he tore that Achilles, I'm telling you, there was a calm sense that was like, wow, is this going to be the end of Richard Sherman? And now look at him. He's still laughing about the contract he signed because everybody was like, dude, you're an idiot. He was like, no, look, I'm betting on myself, and I'm going to win. Watch.
We got to close on some betting with Alex Boone. You ready?
Ready.
Who will show cleavage during the halftime performance? J-Lo, Shakira, neither, both?
Neither.
Ooh. Really?
Ooh. Neither.
Wow.
It's a kids program, man. You know all those rules got cracked way down.
Besides, we've changed our mentality as a society. It's all about butt.
Okay, well, I got that. I have that prop as well. Will J-Lo show butt cleavage?
Oh, yes, for sure. For sure.
By the way, who would you rather see butt cleavage from, J-Lo or Shakira? I'm Shakira.
J-Lo.
All right, you got to go. That's it. You're done. I'm not kidding. You're actually done. Hey, Alex.
You guys are the best.
You are awesome. And you're right. I don't know that Vegas could handle you, although I think they'd like to take your money. You are a lunatic, man. That was good.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, guys.
We'll see you.
Got to come down for the draft.
Holy crap. I'm hyperventilating trying to keep up with him.
I don't think the studio would be able to contain him.
Come on. You have to love a guy in a workplace. If a boss comes in and is like, if we got to fight, we got to fight. And he's like, okay.
I don't want to, but let's go.
Lotus Management, yeah. Are you listening?
Sorry.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co. Now, back to Cofield & Company in the Findlay Toyota studio.
I just want to clarify my comments. We were talking about Jim Harbaugh with former NFL O-lineman Alex Boone. And he was talking about how Harbaugh would just say, okay, let's fight.
Yeah.
And Boone was like, okay, this is great. I love this. Now I was saying we should have that here at the radio station. Like, I don't want to fight management. But Definitely. There should be a whole set of guidelines where we can punch each other, the staffers. And management definitely gets to punch the staffers if they don't do their job.
I almost did it a couple years ago. You got me on film. I almost destroyed Adam.
You tried to attack Adam over...
I don't know. You guys
were busting
something.
Your chops on something.
Yeah,
you lost it.
They had to go to break.
That's why we do this, though, is you're trying to get people to snap. It's great. That's why we need to be out in remotes and, you know.
We're friends.
We're friends. All right, let's get into the nuts and bolts side of things with the Super Bowl. Pro Football Focus is one of our favorite sites. I know you love it. Adam Hill's not here today. He loves it. Steve Palazzolo is part of the PFF crew, and he's down in Miami. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
So we have a lot to get into here. Right out of the gates, one of the things we use the most on this show are your site's quarterback rankings. And I want you to explain to people how you guys put together the QB rankings. Like, what are all the different parameters you use to judge quarterbacks?
Yeah, so we grade every single player on every play. And, you know, each position kind of has its own little rubric, so to speak. And we grade them based off production and, you know, how well they did their job, essentially. So when a quarterback makes a great throw, we give them credit for it, whether it's caught or not. If he makes a bad throw, you know, throws one right to an interception, it's a bad throw, whether it's intercepted or not, you know, if it's right at a linebacker. So, you know, just trying to bring context to every single play. We do that for every position, and then more specifically with the quarterback, just trying to give proper credit for each throw. And that's why sometimes the rankings don't match the stats. Over time, the stats and the grades usually will match up, but sometimes there's discrepancies between what the actual production looks like and, you know, how the quarterback actually played in a given game or even a season sometimes.
So where does Jimmy Garoppolo fall on that scale? Because, you know, a lot has been made of the last two games, the fact that he didn't really throw the ball against Green Bay. You guys in your podcast pointed out he has trouble reading linebackers. Where does he fall on that? Where do you fall on Jimmy Garoppolo as the quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's, you know, a mid-tier quarterback. I've compared him to Matt Hasselbeck before, which I think is a still a strong comparison. If we remember, Hasselbeck did lead the Seahawks to a Super Bowl, and he was a very good quarterback for a while, and he was in a good system where he could put up some numbers. I think that is Garoppolo. So number 13 in our overall rankings over at PFF.com right now. And that is a season where he was productive. He hit open throws. He did misread linebackers a little bit more than you would like. He fumbled a couple times in the pocket. I think that was the big thing with Garoppolo. He'd be cruising along, having a great game, and then, you know, have one really boneheaded decision that kind of screwed it all up. So if he can avoid those on Sundays, on Sunday play a little bit of a cleaner game, you know, he's really played well. And I think we have a lot of recency bias to the fact that he only threw the ball 8 times and they didn't need him much in the divisional round against the Vikings. He has shown that if they need to throw the ball, Saints game, Seahawks in week 17, you know, a couple must-win games down the stretch, Garoppolo has shown more than capable to make the necessary throws in that offense.
So along those lines, one of the popular props out here has been pass attempts for him, and it's about 29.5 or 30.5. What do you think the game plan is going to be? Do you think that's a fair number?
Yeah, I think you know, our guys don't love the game itself, but they do love all the prop bets around Jimmy G and his passing. I do think, you know, we're probably going to get into some kind of shootout situation, and I know it's easy to say that, and all of a sudden you had that 13-3 Super Bowl last year, but I do think, you know, either Mahomes is going to score a lot of points and the Niners have to keep up, or the Niners are going to get the lead, you know, and Mahomes is going to have to make a comeback, right? And there'll be, I think there'll be plenty of passing on both sides. So I think I like all of Garoppolo's passing props.
So focusing on the 49ers offense, obviously a lot, of course, is around Raheem Mostert, the running back position, what's going to happen here. Over the last few days, Matt Breida has kind of been picking up some steam as like a long-shot MVP candidate. Some of his props have been getting bet up a little bit here. What do you make of the backfield situation in general? Is it hot hand Mostert? Is it going to be a shootout more Jimmy Garoppolo? How do you expect the backfield to be handled?
I think backfield-wise, it'll always be a hot hand for the way Shanahan's been working things. I mean, it's the scheme there, man. I mean, you put Mostert into space, and then he's got that speed, and that's how he created those big plays. So they do such a good job of scheming it up, making one defender, you know, just lose his gap to create just enough of a crease for all those speed guys. And so I like the fact that they can mix it up. I mean, I think Mostert, if they're trying to run the ball, Mostert's going to be the guy. But they've done a nice job of mixing things up. And again, it's all about putting those speedy playmakers into space. And I think Shanahan's got those 2 weeks to figure out creative ways to make that happen.
So how do you guys balance season-long numbers versus recency? Like, the Chiefs' defense is a really good example. Their season-long numbers against the run are atrocious. But last few games, they've been better. And we know what they did to the second half against Derrick Henry. So how do you balance that dynamic when you look at these matchups?
Yeah, I think season-long is always a better thing to look at. I mean, just a couple of years ago, the 2017 Patriots were atrocious early in the season, and then it was like, hey, they flipped the switch. Now they have a good defense, and then they got torched in the Super Bowl. So, like, those first 4 weeks kind of mattered in that analysis. So I think the big season sample size is always more important. But at the same time, I think run defense for the Chiefs, they've had a couple games this year. Minnesota, you know, who really likes to run the ball, and the Chiefs shut them down. And then last week, or, you know, the AFC Championship with Derrick Henry, I think if they really, really want to stop the run, it's more of a schematic decision. You can stack the box. You can allot the resources necessary to stop the run. It's just a matter of, do you want to do that? Do you really want to open up the play-action passing game? So I think season-long, the Chiefs haven't been great against the run, but if they schematically want to at least slow down San Francisco, I think they have the opportunity to do that schematically.
So the flip side, of course, Kansas City offense versus San Francisco's defense. I'm really excited to watch this offensive line versus that defensive line. And again, like referring back to your podcast, you guys talked about this during the AFC Championship week, that some of these individual offensive linemen for Kansas City, you guys had grading out really well individually. How do you think this matchup plays out? Because I kind of think Kansas City, from a pass protection standpoint, is really underrated along the offensive line.
Yeah, they're solid up front. Mitchell Schwartz, you know, one of the best right tackles in the entire NFL, probably the best pass-protecting right tackle. So they're solid, and then a lot of pressure is really dependent on what the quarterback does. And if Mahomes remains patient and remains the guy that we saw the first couple playoff games, where he's willing to just sit in the pocket, find the open man, doesn't always have to make the big play, that makes him dangerous. The other part about Mahomes, you obviously don't want him getting outside the pocket. So I think there's that. You know, this kind of that cat and mouse game with the Niners. Do they want to really get after him? Do you want to pressure him, or do you want to just contain him? Do you want to run games and stunts and maybe get caught inside a little bit too much? And before you know it, Mahomes is outside the pocket creating those big plays. So I always like to think the best way to to slow down Mahomes is to more compress the pocket on him rather than, you know, beating your man and getting around it, you know, because then he's really good at eluding those pressures. So I do think the Niners might slow play it a little bit, try to compress the pocket, and I think that's going to be one of the best battles in this entire game.
One of the things that stuck out to me going back over San Francisco's schedule, so when they played, you know, I kind of dictated them as mobile quarterbacks. You can throw Lamar Jackson in there, but they have the design runs for him. But four games against Kyler Murray, four games against Russell Wilson combined, they had 27 attempts, 186 yards. Is that something to look for here, like with the newfound mobility of Mahomes over the last three games, that he could get some big runs here because San Francisco in four games against those quarterbacks kind of struggled to contain them from a rushing perspective?
Yeah, you know, part of those are scrambles. Part of them are design runs. But, yeah, I think that's a big factor. And I think the Niners, you know, will remember that, so to speak. And I think, you know, Bill Belichick always kind of has this game plan against the mobile quarterbacks, you know, to just make sure you don't get outside your pass rush lanes, make it difficult for them, you know, give it a tight, make it a tight pocket to throw from, but, you know, don't lose contain. I think it's a huge factor. It's also one of those, you know, added tools in Mahomes' toolbox here, because last year he's an MVP, he's incredible, he didn't run a ton, but this year he is picking his spots, and it's just so dangerous. If you can actually cover their unbelievable playmakers, he's just going to run for 10, 15, 20 yards. That's just unfair at this point. So I got to give Mahomes a ton of credit because he's figuring that out, and he's just picking his spots with that. So, yeah, absolutely, that could be a huge part in this game.
So you mentioned props at the top. Are there any props specifically that stuck out to you guys when you're analyzing this game?
I think it was more just Jimmy G's passing yards. Yeah. And I think because, you know, everybody's remembering the last thing that we saw, eight pass attempts and all that stuff. And people know it's going to potentially be a shootout against Kansas City, but I think that's, you know, that's a big part of it, is the fact that Kansas City's pass coverage, you know, they'll give a little bit something up, and, you know, game flow wise, expecting Garoppolo to have to throw the ball either to win or to make a comeback.
Steve Palazzolo is with us, Pro Football Focus. So you mentioned liking a lot of the props on Jimmy G. Can we use the site to play some of the other prop bets?
On our site?
Yes.
I believe we've got, I don't know if the articles are out yet or coming out, but we have a ton of Super Bowl coverage in general, but player props, I believe, are a big part of that. So, yeah, we've been trying to attack this game from all angles over at BFF.com.
Other very important thing, you guys are all over the NFL draft because you grade college players as well. So for Raiders fans and all these folks coming to Vegas for the draft, your site is the nuts.
Yeah, you know, with the Raiders, there's a handful of teams, I think, because this wide receiver draft class is so deep, that I'm going to suggest you double up at wide receiver. Grab two receivers, transform your offense. The Packers could use it. I think the Raiders could use it. Get a couple guys in there to complement Darren Waller and, you know, give Derek Carr some weapons. I think that would be a fantastic season to try to revamp the passing offense. So, yeah, all of our draft coverage is fantastic. Our guy Mike Renner runs that. He's done a great job. Draft guides out there, and yeah, we'll be covering that nonstop right up through the draft.
Hey, last one. We got about a minute left, so I don't know if it's enough time because this is a wide-ranging question. Just your take as a former pitcher on what the Astros were caught doing.
Yeah, I got to admit, I played with a scuffed ball during live batting practice in spring training 2009. So I felt guilty when they came out cheating. I was using a stuffed ball and I looked great. No, it's not great. I mean, I think when you have something that is so, there was so much planning behind it. There was so much that goes into it, and baseball players we're just a weird bunch in general. And, they put a lot of time and effort to try to find those edges. I don't love that whole concept. I didn't love all the steroid stuff cause I was clean. I tried to do it the right way. So I don't love it, and I don't mind the really harsh punishments that have to come down from it.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned the point about steroids because, hey, if you start loading up on roids, who knows? Maybe you're in the majors and you've got like a 8-9 year career all loaded up.
It really changes things from a money standpoint, from a status standpoint. I'm glad I didn't do it, but I, you know, it for some guys, it's like, hey, do it once, get that big contract, you're set for life. If that's your goal, I mean, you reached it. You know, no matter how it ended up happening, even if it was illegal.
Steve, we appreciate it. Enjoy your time in Miami. Thanks for the input.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Steve Palazzolo, who, big guy, 6'10", 260, pitched all through the minor leagues, didn't break through. And I don't think I'd ever mentioned that to him before. Like, dude, write it up. What are you doing?
If for the record, I would totally do it.
PFF.com. I've gone on the record many times, of course.
Yes. Why would you not?
I'm a slime ball, and I won millions.
Well, yes.
And right about now, I'd probably be dropping dead.
If there were vocal steroids that made me a better radio host, I'd be totally in.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.